Blog Talk Radio.
Don't oil that door. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie Time. What is it? I think it's old time radio tonight. I don't know.
Not so old time radio tonight. It's not so old time tonight.
It's not that old, but yet another version of October 30th, War of the Worlds, as we continue our annual tradition of bringing you War of the Worlds in some form or another. And we've got another form for you.
Yeah, I think originally when you envisioned this, Dale, you envisioned it as a... just replaying War of the Worlds every year. And look
right.
What we've done to your
And that would have been fine, but you went nuts, Dave. You started finding all these cool versions. And, updated version of the tradition. A revised, if you will, version of what we do. And that's old-time radio and stuff.
Yep. So we have yet another version, and one of the more recent, I mean, the only thing more recent that we've played in this probably been my radio plays that happened right around 2000 to 2004, you know. This one go to October of 1997, so although it's not old-time radio, not even from the Silver Age of radio, it's still, 25 years ago?
Yikes. Where do the time go?
It is 25 years ago. Wow.
1997. Oh, now, isn't that the year that the Jupiter 2 was supposed to have taken off? It's 96 or 97,
I think it was. Yeah.
And it's flown into history ever since. As Amazon Prime picks up Lost in Space, guess what I've been doing? Anyway. we got yet another version. Dave, tell them a little bit about this version tonight from 1997.
Well, this comes to us from a Los Angeles radio station where they actually had done... I guess either Christmas Carol or It's a Wonderful Life or something like that. So it kind of on a regular basis in front of a live audience with Foley sound people and things like that. And so this was not their first attempt at it. This was from, who was it? They were Mark and Brian. They were a disc jockey tandem in Los Angeles in 97 and before. And they got together with other radio people from their station, brought in news people and such, and put together this version of War of the Worlds. Somebody brought the script together, and it is very much in the original vein of the and mostly was the original play. I think I noticed a couple things were a little different, or I noticed them here that I didn't notice in the Orson Welles, just because of the way it was presented, but. And on top of their radio personnel, they also brought in Paul Savino and William Shatner, who apparently enjoyed their shows on the radio. So I guess that's about the most I really have to give with it, since I'm not technically familiar with the two. So
that's okay. That's a heck of a lot more. That's a heck of a lot more than I knew a few moments ago. So, every day is just another step in the journey to become a little less stupid.
Man, I've got a long way to go.
Yeah, I got a journey ahead of me. I hope I packed a lunch and dinner and breakfast
and
tomorrow.
And breakfast. Yeah. We can go on.
Ad infinitum, yes.
A good clean recording, and it should be a lot of fun. So actually, I found this through following Vince Grimley. And
really?
He's the one that posted this. There may be another one posted, but his is the one that I caught. And so another horror host out of Vegas? Is that, or he was in Vegas, or I forget where he's from.
Viva,
I think he was in California. Now he's not in California. So, but he puts together a cool little show. Doesn't do a whole lot of episodes, but he puts together a very cool show. I like what he does.
Yep. He's one of the good ones.
He is. He's like one of the ones that really puts good thought into it. And I appreciate when people put that kind of effort into to hosting movies.
Well, I guess that leaves me out.
No. Oh, look what you do. You do movie parodies and things like that in your show. So, Yeah.
Whatever that. I don't know what that means. It means we got a lot of radio tonight.
Yeah. Time to kick it off.
Kick we shall. So this isn't going to be no 1954 movie. This isn't going to be the H.G. Wells novel. This is War of the Worlds from Mark and Brian. And what do we have a more specific date in 1997?
It was for Halloween in October of 1997. I'm assuming it was pretty close to Halloween.
Right.
And then they may have aired it. They may have aired it on the station on Halloween. But
nice.
They recorded
so
it from a live audience earlier than that.
So, nice. So here we go then with from 25, count on 25 years ago. Let's begin with this year's presentation of War of the Worlds.
We'll try our best to present to you an idea of what it is that we're looking at. We are standing on a beautiful stage in a 150-seat theater here at the museum. In front of us are the Signet Sound Deluxe Foley people, and there are five or six of them with keyboards and samplers and computers and all that. Good morning, guys and ladies. Thank you for coming.
All graduates from ITT.
We are standing on the stage facing the audience, and all of the following people that we're going to introduce to you are standing with us. To our immediate right is Mr. Paul Sorvino.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. You are taller than I thought.
Thank you.
And blonder.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, why don't you make a daughter comment?
Thank God for Clairol.
Standing next to Paul Sorvino, actually now standing, was sitting, a very good friend of the program, please welcome William Shatner.
Next to him, you'll know him from Entertainment Tonight and his own television programs over the years, Mr. Leonard Maltin.
One of the most respected and well-known news anchors here in Los Angeles, Paul Moyer.
And having just arrived in the nick of time, being stuck in cold water traffic, Colleen Williams.
Hi, Colleen.
Everybody. And the gentleman you just heard doing a little Roger Rabbit, this is the biggest working voice in the business, Mr. Jess Harnell.
And, of course, the glue, the epoxy, the caulk.
The huge caulk of the show.
Of the entire broadcast. My partner, Mark Thompson, and myself, Brian Phelps. Thank you very much. Thank you, sir. The cock.
The big. All right. There's best, we don't have to take a break, so the only way we know to do it is just to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, our Halloween gift to you and to those of you listening, this is the War of the Worlds.
The Mark and Brian radio program and its affiliated stations present Paul Sorvino,
William Shatner, Leonard Maltin, Paul Moyer, Colleen Williams, Jess Harnell, and Mark and Brian, in a radio play by Howard Koch, suggested by the H.G. Wells novel, The War of the Worlds. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark and Brian.
We now know that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligence greater than man's and yet as mortal as his own.
We now know that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over the small spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space. Yet, across an immense ethereal gulf, minds that are to minds as ours are to the beasts in the jungle, intellects vast, cool, and unsympathetic regarded this earth with envious eyes, and slowly and surely drew their plans against us. In the 39th year of the 20th century came the Great Disillusionment.
It was near the end of October. Business was better. The war scare was over. More men were back at work. Sales were picking up. On this particular evening, October 30th, the Crossley Service estimated that 32 million people were listening to the radio.
For the next 24 hours, not much change in temperature. A slight atmospheric disturbance of undetermined origin is reported over Nova Scotia, causing a low-pressure area to move down rather rapidly over the northeastern states, bringing a forecast of rain accompanied by winds of light gale force. Maximum temperature 66, minimum 48. This weather report comes to you from the Government Weather Bureau. We take you now to the Meridian Room in the Hotel Park Plaza in downtown New York, where you will be entertained by the music of Ramon Raquello and his orchestra.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. From the Meridian Room in the Park Plaza Hotel in New York City, we bring you the music of Ramon Raquello and his orchestra. With a touch of the Spanish, Ramon Raquello leads off with La Comparsita.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity. Professor Pearson of the observatory at Princeton confirms Farrell's observation and describes the phenomenon as, and I quote, like a jet of blue flame shot from a gun, close quote. We now return you to the music of Ramon Raquello, playing for you in the Meridian Room of the Park Plaza Hotel, situated in downtown New York.
And now, a tune that never loses favor, the ever-popular Stardust. Ramon Raquello and his orchestra.
Ladies and gentlemen, following on the news given in our bulletin a moment ago, the Government Meteorological Bureau has requested the large observatories of the country to keep an astronomical watch on any further disturbances occurring on the planet Mars. Due to the unusual nature of this occurrence, we have arranged an interview with a noted astronomer, Professor Pearson, who will give us his views on this event. In a few moments, we will take you to the Princeton Observatory at Princeton, New Jersey. We return you until then to the music of Ramon Raquello and his orchestra. We are ready now to take you to the Princeton Observatory at Princeton, where Carl Phillips, our commentator, will interview Professor Richard Pearson, famous astronomer. We take you now to Princeton, New Jersey.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carl Phillips speaking to you from the observatory at Princeton. I'm standing in a large semicircular room, pitch black except for an oblong split in the ceiling. And through this opening, I can see a sprinkling of stars that cast a kind of frosty glow over the intricate mechanism of the huge telescope. The ticking sound you hear is the vibration of the clockwork. And Professor Pearson stands directly above me on a small platform, peering through the giant lens. I ask you to be patient, ladies and gentlemen, during any delay that may arise during our interview. Besides his ceaseless watch of the heavens, Professor Pearson may be interrupted by telephone or other communications, and during this period, he is in constant touch with the astronomical centers of the world. Professor, may I begin our questions?
At any time, Mr. Phillips.
Professor, would you please tell our radio audience exactly what you see as you observe the planet Mars through your telescope?
Nothing unusual at the moment, Mr. Phillips. A red disk swimming in a blue sea, transverse stripes across the disk. Quite distinct now, because Mars happens to be at the point nearest the Earth, in opposition, as we call it.
Ah, and in your opinion, what do these transverse stripes signify, Professor Pearson?
Not canals, I can assure you, Mr. Phillips, although that's the popular conjecture of those who imagine Mars to be inhabited. From a scientific viewpoint, the stripes are merely the result of atmospheric conditions peculiar to the planet.
Then you're quite convinced, as a scientist, that living intelligence, as we know it, does not exist on Mars?
Oh, I should say the chances against it are 1,000 to 1.
And yet, how do you account for these gas eruptions occurring on the surface of the planet at regular intervals?
Mr. Phillips, I can't account for it.
Hmm. By the way, Professor, for the benefit of our listeners, how far is Mars from Earth?
Approximately 40 million miles.
Well, that seems a safe enough distance. just a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Someone has just handed Professor Pearson a message. And while he reads it, let me remind you that we are speaking to you from the observatory in Princeton, New Jersey, where we are interviewing the world-famous astronomer, Professor Pearson. One moment, please, Professor. Pearson has passed me a message which he has just received. Professor, may I read the message to the listening audience?
Certainly, Mr. Phillips.
Ladies and gentlemen, I shall read you a wire addressed to Professor Pearson from Dr. Gray of the National History Museum, New York. Quote, 9:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, seismograph registered shock of almost earthquake intensity occurring within a radius of 20 miles of Princeton. Please investigate, signed Lloyd Gray, Chief of Astronomical Division, unquote. Professor Pearson, could this occurrence possibility have something to do with the disturbances observed on the planet Mars?
Hardly, Mr. Phillips. This is probably a meteorite of unusual size, and its arrival at this particular time is merely a coincidence. However, we shall conduct a search as soon as daylight permits.
Thank you, Professor. Ladies and gentlemen, for the past 10 minutes, we've been speaking to you from the observatory at Princeton, bringing you a special interview with Professor Pearson, noted astronomer. This is Carl Phillips speaking. We are returning you now to our New York studio.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is the latest bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News, Toronto, Canada. Professor Morse of McMillan University reports observing a total of 3 explosions on the planet Mars between the hours of 7:45 p.m. and 9:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This confirms earlier reports received from American observatories. Now, just in, nearer home, comes a special bulletin from Trenton, New Jersey. It is reported that at 8:50 p.m., a huge flaming object, believed to be a meteorite, fell on a farm in the neighborhood of Grover's Mill, New Jersey, 22 miles from Trenton. The flash of the sky was visible within a radius of several hundred miles, and the noise of the impact was heard as far north as Elizabeth. We have now dispatched a special mobile unit to the scene. We have our commentator, Carl Phillips. We'll give you a word picture of the scene as soon as he can reach there from Princeton. In the meantime, we take you to the Hotel Martinet in Brooklyn, where Bobby Millette and his orchestra are offering a program of dance music. All right, we take you now to Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Carl Phillips again.
out at the Wilmoth Farm, Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Professor Pearson and myself made the 11 miles from Princeton in 10 minutes. Well, I hardly know where to begin to paint for you a word picture of the strange scene before my eyes, like something out of a modern Arabian Nights. Well, I just got here. I haven't had a chance to look around yet. I guess that's it. Yes, that's the thing directly in front of me, half buried in a vast pit. Must have struck with terrific force. The ground is covered with splinters of a tree. It must have struck on its way down. What I can see of the object itself doesn't look very much like a meteor. At least not the meteors I've seen. It looks more like a huge cylinder. It has a diameter of, what would you say, Professor Pearson?
What's that?
What would you say, what's the diameter of this?
About 30 yards.
30 yards. 30. The metal on the sheath is... I've never seen anything like it. The color is sort of yellowish-white. Curious spectators now are pressing close to the object. In spite of the efforts of the police to keep them back, they're getting in front of my line of vision. Would you mind standing one side, please?
Wait, what side there?
Would you mind standing one...
I guess he's going to have to stand to one side there as we completed part one of War of the Worlds from Mark and Brian's show back 25 years ago. And Erie House also welcomes the lovely, the delightful CW.
Be late. Behind schedule. Greetings and felicitations, okay. CW here. Hello, hello.
And you're here to help us evaluate our wonderful newer rendition of War of the Worlds.
Absolutely, with Captain Kirk himself.
Yep. And Paul Savino, and they've been kind of busy up to this point now. So,
if you guys like the
Shatner
fun little
ad. Interviewer, and yep, so. Interesting. Well, it's an interesting script to begin with, the original script, and this is very much the original script.
Yeah, there is some lines, especially at the very beginning in the intro, I know were very familiar to me, because that is definitely taken directly from the novel.
Right, and they didn't update it to be in California where they are. They updated it to be right where it was in New Jersey, Jersey.
Jersey.
Jersey. Or... So, yes. So it is interesting because on the whole, I think there's a few things here and there, but on the whole, it could be because some people wouldn't understand some of the things that were said back then, or I don't know. But anyway, for the most part, it seems pretty true to the original script.
Yes, so far so good. Let us enjoy this one. Oh, I'm going to like this. Yet
we
another.
We get to push these people out of the way now. We get to push
it's
people out of the way
good.
Now.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, might as well get on to part two then of War of the Worlds for Mark and Brian. Thanks for joining us. October 30th, it's Halloween 2022.
They're getting in front of my line of vision. Would you mind standing one side, please?
Right, one side here.
Would you mind standing
one side?
Please. While the policemen are pushing the crowd back, here's Mr. Wilmoth, owner of the farm here. He may have some interesting facts to add. Mr. Wilmoth, would you please tell the radio audience as much as you remember of this rather unusual visitor that has dropped into your backyard? A step closer. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. Wilmoth.
I was listening to the radio.
Closer and closer and louder.
Oh, sorry.
No, louder.
Yes, sir.
And closer.
Well, I was listening to the radio, kind of drowsing. That professor fella was talking about Mars, so I was half dozing.
Yes, Mr. Wilmoth. And then what happened?
Well, as I was saying, I was listening to the radio, kind of halfway dozing.
Yes, Mr. Wilmoth, and then you saw something.
Well, not at first, no. I heard something, though.
And what did you hear?
Well, the hissing sound, kind of like
Like a 4th of July rocket or
something. Yes, and then what?
Well, I turned my head out the window and would have sworn I was to sleep and dream.
Yes, yes.
I seen kind of a greenish streak, and then zingo, something smacked the ground and knocked me clear off my chair.
Well, were you frightened, Mr. Wilmot?
Well, I ain't quite sure. I reckon I was kind of riled.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wilmot. Thank you very much.
Want me to tell you some more?
No, that's quite all right. That's plain. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard Mr. Wilmot, the owner of the farm where this thing has fallen. I wish I could convey the atmosphere, the background of this fantastic scene. Hundreds of cars are parked in the field in back of us. Police are trying to rope off the roadway leading into the farm, but it's no use. They're breaking right through. Cars' headlights throw an enormous spotlight on the pit where the object's half buried. Some of the more daring souls now are venturing near the edge. Their silhouettes stand out against the metal sheen. One man wants to touch the thing. He's having an argument with the policeman. The policeman wins. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's something I haven't mentioned in all this excitement, but it's becoming more distinct. Perhaps you've caught it already on your radio. Listen. Listen, please. Do you hear it? It's a curious humming sound that seems to be coming from inside the object. I'll move the microphone nearer. Here. Now, we're not more than 25 feet away. Can you hear it now? Oh, Professor Pearson!
Yes, Mr. Phillips.
Can you tell us the meaning of that scraping noise inside the thing?
Well, it's possibly the unique cooling of its surface.
Do you still think it's a meteor, Professor?
I don't know what to think. The metal casing is definitely extraterrestrial, not found on this Earth. Friction with the Earth's atmosphere usually tears holes in a meteorite. This thing is smooth and, as you can see, of cylindrical shape.
Just a minute. Just a minute, something is happening. Ladies and gentlemen, this is terrific. This end of the thing is beginning to flake off. The top is beginning to rotate like a screw. This thing must be hollow.
Hey, wait a minute. Maybe there's a man in there trying to escape. Wait a minute.
Just a moment there. Will you please get back? Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most terrifying thing I've ever witnessed. Wait a minute. Someone's crawling out of the hollow top. Someone or something I can see peering out of that black hole. Two luminous discs. Are they eyes? It might be a face. It might... Oh, God. Good heavens. Something's wriggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. Now it's another one, another one, and another one. And another one. They look like tentacles to me. There, I can see the thing's body. It's large. As large as a man. It glistens like wet leather. But that face, it's, ladies and gentlemen, it's indescribable. I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it. It's so awful. The eyes are black and they gleam like a serpent. The mouth is kind of V-shaped with saliva dripping from its rimless lips that seem to quiver and pulsate. The monster, whatever it is, can hardly move. It seems weighed down by possibly gravity or something. The thing's rising up now. The crowd falls back. They've seen plenty. Most experienced. I can't find words. Well, I'll pull this microphone with me as I talk. I'll have to stop the description until I can take a new position. Hold on, will you please? I'll be right back in a minute.
We are bringing you an eyewitness account of what's happening, what's going on at the Wilmot Farm, Grover's Mill, New Jersey. We now return you to Carl Phillips at Grover's Mill.
Ladies and gentlemen, am I on? Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall,
that adjoins Mr. Wilmoth's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk, as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit, about 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep the distance. The captain is conferring with someone. I can't quite see who. Oh, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. And now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and the two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. If those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute. Something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flames springing from the mirror, and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Oh, my God! They're turning into flames. Now the whole field's caught on fire. The woods, the barns, the gas tanks of automobiles. It's spreading everywhere. It's coming this way now. About 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's something wrong, some difficulty with our field transmission. I don't know what it is. However, we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime, a late bulletin handed to me from San Diego, California. Professor Indelkoffer, speaking at a dinner of the California Astronomical Society, expresses the opinion that the explosions on Mars are undoubtedly nothing more than severe volcanic disturbances on the surface of the planet. We continue now with our piano interlude. Ladies and gentlemen, I've just been handed a message that came from Grover's Mill by telephone. Just one moment, please. Yes, at least 40 people, including six state troopers, lie dead in a field east of the village of Grover's Mill, their bodies burned and distorted beyond all possible recognition. The next voice you hear will be that of Brigadier General Montgomery Smith, commander of the state militia at Trenton, New Jersey.
I have been requested by the governor of New Jersey to place the counties of Mercer and Middlesex as far west as Princeton and east to Jamesburg under martial law. No one will be permitted to enter this area except by special pass issued by state or military authorities. Four companies of state militia are proceeding from Trenton to Grover's Mill and will aid in the evacuation of homes within the range of military operations. Thank you.
You've just been listening to General Montgomery Smith, commanding the state militia at Trenton. In the meantime, further details of the catastrophe at Grover's Mill are coming in. The strange creatures, after unleashing their deadly assault, crawled back in their pit and made no attempt to prevent the efforts of the firemen to recover the bodies and extinguish the fire. The combined fire departments of Mercer County are fighting the flames, which menace the entire countryside. We've been unable to establish any contact with our mobile unit at Grover's Mill, but we hope to be able to return you there at the earliest possible moment. In the meantime, we take you to... Joseph, one moment, please. Ladies and gentlemen, I've just been informed that we finally established communication with an eyewitness of the tragedy. Professor Pearson has been located at a farmhouse near Grover's Mill, where he's established an emergency observation post. As a scientist, he will give you his explanation of the calamity. The next voice you hear will be that of Professor Pearson, brought to you by Direct Wire. Professor Pearson.
Of the creature in the rocket cylinder at Grover's Mill, I can give you no authoritative information either as to their nature, their origin, or their purposes here on Earth. Of their destructive instrument, I might venture some conjectural explanation. For want of a better term, I shall refer to the mysterious weapon as a heat ray. It's all too evident that these creatures have scientific knowledge far in advance of our own. It is my guess that in some way they're able to generate an intense heat in a chamber of practically absolute non-conductivity. This intense heat they project in a parallel beam against any object they choose by means of a polished parabolic mirror of unknown composition, much as the mirror of a lighthouse projects a beam of light. That is my conjecture of the origin of the heat ray.
Thank you, Professor Pearson. Ladies and gentlemen, here is a bulletin now from Trenton. It is a brief statement informing us that the charred body of Carl Phillips has been identified in a Trenton hospital. Now, here's another bulletin from Washington, D.C. Just a moment. The office of the director of the National Red Cross reports 10 units of Red Cross emergency workers have been assigned to the headquarters of the state militia stationed outside of Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Here's a bulletin from the state police, Princeton Junction. The fires at Grover's Mill and vicinity are now under control. Scouts report all quiet in the pit. There is no sign of life appearing from the mouth of the cylinder. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special statement from Mr. Harry McDonald, Vice President in charge of operations.
We have received a request from the state militia at Trenton to place at their disposal our entire broadcasting facilities. In view of the gravity of the situation and believing the radio has a responsibility to serve in the public interest at all times, we are turning over our facilities to the state militia at Trenton.
We take you now to the field headquarters of the state militia near Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
This is Captain Lansing of the Signal Corps, attached to the state militia, now engaged in military operations in the vicinity of Grover's Mill. Situation arising from the reported presence of certain individuals of unidentified nature is now under complete control. The cylindrical object, which lies in a pit directly below our position, is surrounded on all sides by 8 battalions of infantry without heavy field pieces, but adequately armed with rifles and machine guns. Now, all cause for alarm, if such cause ever existed, is now entirely unjustified. These things, whatever they are, not even venture to poke their heads above the pit. Now, I can see their hiding place plainly in the glare of the searchlights here. With all their reported resources, these creatures can scarcely stand up against heavy machine gun fire. Well, anyway, it's an interesting outing for the troops. I can make out their khaki uniforms crossing back and forth in front of the lights. It looks almost like a real war. There appears to be some slight smoke in the woods bordering the Millstone River. Probably a fire started by campers. Well, we ought to see some action soon. One of the companies is deploying on the left flank. A quick thrust, and this will all be over. No, wait a minute. I see something on top of the cylinder. No, it's nothing but a shadow. Now the troops are on the edge of the Wilmot Farm. 7,000 armed men closing in on an old metal tube. Wait, that wasn't a shadow. It's something moving. Solid metal. Kind of a shield-like affair rising up out of the cylinder. It's going higher and higher. Why, it's standing on legs. It's actually rearing up on a sort of metal framework. Now it's reaching above the trees and the searchlights are on it. Oh, hold on!
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that these strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmland tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars. The battle which took place tonight at Grover's Mills has ended in one of the most startling defeats ever suffered by an army in modern times. 7,000 men, armed with rifles and machine guns, pitted against a single fighting machine of the invaders from Mars. 120 known survivors, the rest strewn over the battle area from Grover's Mill to Plainsboro, crushed and trampled to death under the metal feet of the monster or burned to cinders by its heat ray. The monster is now in control of the middle section of New Jersey, has effectively cut the state through its center. Communication lines are down from Pennsylvania to the Atlantic Ocean. Railroad tracks are torn. Service from New York to Philadelphia discontinued, except routing some of the trains through Allentown and Phoenixville. Highways to the north, south, and west are clogged with frantic human traffic. Police and Army reserves are unable to control the mad flight. By morning, the fugitives will have swelled. Philadelphia, Camden, and Trenton is estimated to twice their normal population. Martial law prevails throughout New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania.
And you couldn't get a decent bagel if you tried. Oy.
What do you want, the everything bagel? Yeah. You can't have everything, sir. You can't have everything.
But I like everything bagels. They are quite good, actually.
Yeah, my wife likes them, too.
Yeah.
Since oh my gosh, everything bagel.
Yep. Since the cost of everything is going up, though, it's a guilty pleasure I have temporarily suspended. There will be no bagels for me for some time.
No bagels for you.
No bagel for you. Or soup.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the cost of four cigarettes, man. What a,
yeah.
It's really going up there.
Yep. That's right.
You may have
my you know I got my priorities straight, by gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my.
Can choose my form of slow death, but slow, painful coughing. Yes.
Yes.
But in regards to H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, everybody hopefully knows that dear H.G. was a member of a British subject, a subject of the realm, as it were.
Right.
Yes, he was.
He did not have a he did not have an attack in New Jersey.
No, he wasn't from Jersey. He was not from Jersey.
He was not from Jersey.
Not that
yeah.
kind of Jersey.
Yeah. When I still had my streaming channel, we had I had found from one version of The Lost World that I found, and they had a introductory piece in silent, of course, of when of H.G. Wells talking. And then didn't we have something, Dave, on radio here when Orson Welles met H.G.
Yeah,
Wells?
Yeah, back from our very first episode, our very first the very first time we played War of the Worlds, right after that broadcast, we went ahead and played that interview between H.G. Wells and Orson Welles.
Yep. It's pretty cool, man.
No relation as far as they both knew.
Yeah, because they spelled their names even differently. So, you know, but yeah.
Yeah. Orson adds that little extra E in there. He's...
Yeah.
Mr. Fancy.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Oh, Fancy. Woo-hoo.
He deserved it. I guess H.G. Wells was not real happy when it first happened and all this panicking came up. But he came to love it because it really got his name in the book back out again. You know, people were buying
yeah.
the book again.
Put him back in the forefront. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, put a few more pound notes in his wallet, as it were.
Yes.
Yep.
Those filthy bloody pound notes.
Yeah.
They don't look that heavy. They don't look that heavy, but oh well.
Oh, rather pound notes.
Rather.
But H.G. Wells, a wonderful writer. Of course, wrote The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
And in the Days of the Comet, I believe he wrote that one as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Ooh.
Food of the Gods. So he was quite the prolific chap.
That was a horrible movie. Food of the Gods.
Oh yeah. That was really awful.
Yeah, that was.
I don't know how they get.
I just kept saying why. If H.G. Wells were alive, he would also ask why. Why did you do this to me?
Why? I think they were trying to get the hippies to go to the movies or something.
Maybe.
Don't know.
The hippies. The hippies. No hippies were going to see Food of the Gods. It was crappy to them, too. They weren't that high.
But, has anyone ever seen the movie with Malcolm McDowell, Time After Time, where he portrays H.G. Wells?
I enjoyed that. That was
pretty
matter
cool.
Matter of fact, I liked it, but I was watching it one night, you know, and I fell asleep. And of course, at a time when that watch opened up and the music was playing, my ex came up to me and tried to wake me up. And of course, that's right when I heard the music and I screamed. She screamed and ran in the bedroom. I thought she was going to kill me. Yeah. She waited for her lawyer to do it instead.
That was fate stepping in going, get out, get out. run for your
run
life.
Run now.
Don't look back.
Oh, my gosh. And there, folks, is your real horror Halloween story right there on Eerie House Radio. There you are.
Yes.
I do like that movie. I like that.
Left a shiver up my spine.
Did any of you see the series? Did either of you see the series that spun off of that?
No.
There was a series.
Yeah.
It
was a short run series. One of the cable channels came up with it. And I watched the first episode and a half. I said, for one thing, it wasn't even a 2-hour movie. And they did this like 5 or 6 parts telling the same story. So they just tried to add to it, and it didn't add well. And plus, you had Malcolm McDowell in there, so you're not gonna beat that.
True.
It would be hard to beat, very hard to beat. Not impossible, but very hard to beat. I love the fact that they put him chasing after Jack the Ripper. That is fantastic.
Did you say hard to beat?
Uh-oh.
I feel like a kind of animal from Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Gotta hear the beat. All right, there we go. We welcome Fogsbane and good old Bob to the chat live with us here tonight. You've been here all Halloween week, guys. Thank you so much. It's been a great ride. Our fourth night in a row. We are halfway through our presentation of War of the Worlds, starring Paul Sorvis and the Shatner. The Shatner.
The Shatner, yes.
Let's get into part 3 and see how long it is before these Martians take over.
Martial law prevails throughout New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania. All right, at this time we take you to the Washington for a special broadcast on the national emergency. The Secretary of the Interior.
Citizens of the nation, I shall not try to conceal the gravity of the situation that confronts our country, nor the concern of your government in protecting the lives and the property of its people. However, I wish to impress upon you, private citizens and public officials, all of you, the urgent need of calm and resourceful action. Fortunately, this formidable enemy is still confined to a comparatively small area, and we may place our faith in our military forces to keep them there. In the meantime, placing our faith in God, we must continue the performance of our duties, each and every one of us, so that we may confront this destructive adversary with a nation united, courageous, and consecrated to the preservation of human supremacy on this earth. I thank you.
You have just heard the Secretary of the Interior speaking from Washington. Bulletins too numerous to read are piling up in the studio here. We're informed that the central portion of New Jersey is blacked out from radio communication due to the effect of the heat ray upon power lines and electrical equipment. Here's a special bulletin. New York. Cables have been received from English, French, and German scientific bodies offering assistance. Astronomers report continued gas outbursts at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The majority voiced the opinion that the enemy will be reinforced by additional rocket machines. There have been several attempts made to locate Professor Pearson of Princeton, who's observed Martians at close range. It is feared he was lost in the recent battle. Langham Field, Virginia. Scouting planes report 3 Martian machines visible above treetops. moving north towards Somerville with population fleeing ahead of them. The heat ray not in use, although advancing at express strain speed, invaders pick their way carefully. They seem to be making a conscious effort to avoid destruction of cities and countryside. However, they stop to uproot power lines, bridges, and railroad tracks. Their apparent objective is to crush resistance, paralyze communication, and disorganize human society.
Here's a bulletin from Baskin Ridge, New Jersey. Coon hunters have stumbled on a second cylinder similar to the first one embedded in the Great Swamp 20 miles south this time of Morristown. Army field pieces are proceeding from Newark to blow up the second invading unit before the cylinder can be opened and the fighting machine rigged. They're taking up a position in the foothills of Watchung Mountains. Wait a second here. We have another bulletin from Langham Field, Virginia. Scouting planes report enemy machines, three in number, increasing speed northward, kicking over houses and trees in their evident haste to form a conjunction with our allies south of Morristown. Machines also sighted by telephone operator east of Middlesex, within 10 miles of Plainfield. Hang on, we have a second bulletin here. It reads, this one's from Winston Field, Long Island. A fleet of Army bombers carrying heavy explosives flying north in pursuit of enemy here. Scouting planes act as guides. They keep the speeding enemy in sight here. Just a minute, please, ladies and gentlemen. We've run special wires to the artillery line in adjacent villages to give you direct reports from the zones of the advancing enemy. First, right now, we take you to the battery of the 22nd Field Artillery, located in the Watchung Mountains.
Range, 32 meters.
32 meters.
Projection, 39 degrees.
39 degrees.
Fire.
140 yards to the right, sir.
Shift range, 31 meters.
31 meters.
Projection, 37 degrees.
37 degrees.
Fire.
A hit, sir. We got the tripod on one of them. They've stopped. The others are trying to repair it.
Quick, get the range. Ship 30 meters.
30 meters.
Projection, 27 degrees.
27 degrees.
Fire.
I can't see the shell there, sir. They're letting off a smoke.
What is it?
It's a black smoke, sir. Moving this way. Lying close to the ground. It's moving fast.
Put on gas mask. Get ready to fire. Shift to 24 meters.
24 meters.
Projection, 24 degrees.
24 degrees.
Fire.
I still can't see, sir. The smoke's coming nearer.
Get the range.
23 meters.
24 meters.
23 meters.
Projection, 22 degrees.
Projection, 22 degrees.
Army bombing plane V-843 off Bayonne, New Jersey. Lieutenant Voigt, commanding 8 bombers, reporting to Commander Fairfax, Langham Field. This is Voigt reporting to Commander Fairfax, Langham Field. Enemy tripod machines are now in sight, reinforced by 3 machines from the Morristown cylinder. 6 altogether, 1 machine partially crippled. Believed hit by small gun ray. Guns now appear silent. A heavy black fog hanging close to the earth. Extreme density, nature unknown. No sign of the heat ray. Enemy now turns east, crossing Passaic River into the Jersey Marshes. Another straddles the Pulaski Skyway. Evident objective is New York City. They're pushing down a high-tension power station. The machines are close together now. They're ready to attack. Our planes are circling, ready to strike. 1,000 yards will be over the first. 800 yards. 600 yards. 400. 200. There they go. The giant arm raised. A green flash, they're spraying us with flame. 2,000 feet. Our engines are giving out. There's no chance to release our bombs. There's only one thing left. We're going to drop on a plane at all. We're diving on the first one. The engine's gone. 8,
This is Bayonne, New Jersey, calling Langham Field. This is Bayonne, New Jersey, calling Langham Field. Come in, please.
Oh, this is Langham Field. Go ahead.
8 Army bombers in engagement with enemy tripod machines over Jersey Flats. Engines incapacitated by heat ray, all crashed. 1 enemy machine destroyed. Enemy now discharging heavy black smoke in direction of...
This is Newark, New Jersey. This is Newark, New Jersey. Warning, there's a poisonous black smoke pouring in from Jersey marshes. Reaches South Street. Gas masks useless. Urge population to move into open spaces. Automobiles use Route 7, 23, and 24. Avoid congested areas. Smoke now spreading over Raymond Boulevard.
2X2L calling CQ. 2X2L calling CQ. 2X2L calling XX3R. Come in, please.
Oh, this is 8X3R. Coming back at 2X2L.
How's reception? How's reception? K, please. Where are you? 8X3R. What's the matter?
I'm speaking to you from the roof of Broadcast Building, New York City. The bells you hear ringing are to warn the people to evacuate the city as the Martians approach. Estimated in the last 2 hours, 3 million people have moved out along the road to the north. Hutchinson River Parkway still open for motor traffic. Avoid bridges to Long Island, hopelessly jammed. All communication with Jersey Shores closed 10 minutes ago. No more defenses here. Our army wiped out. Artillery, Air Force, everything gone. Everything wiped out. This may be our last broadcast. We'll stay here to the end. People are holding service here below us in the cathedral. Now I look down the harbor, all manner of boats overloaded with fleeing population pulling out from the docks. Streets are jammed here. Noise and crowds like New Year's Eve in the city here. Wait a minute. I can see them. The enemy's now in sight above the Palisades. Five great machines here. First one is crossing the river. I can see it from here. It's wading the Hudson like a man wading through a brook. Hang on a second. Hang on. Another bulletin handed to me. The Martians are falling in all over the country. We understand one outside of Buffalo, one in Chicago, another in St. Louis. They seem to be timed in space. Now the first machine reaches the shore here. He stands watching, looking over the city. His steel, cowlished head is even with the skyscrapers. He's waiting for the others. They rise like a line of new towers on the city's west side. Now they're lifting up their metal hands. Oh, God. This is the end. The smoke's coming here. Black smoke's drifting all over the city. You can probably hear the panic. People in the streets see it now. They're running towards the East River, thousands of them, dropping. They look like they're dropping in like rats. The smoke's spreading even faster here. You can see it's reached Times Square. People are trying to run away from it, but there's no escaping. There's no use. They're falling. They're dropping like flies here. I can see it. The smoke is crossing 6th Street all the way up to 5th Avenue. It's 100 yards away, 50 feet.
Two X two L, calling CQ. 2X2L, calling CQ. New York? Isn't there anyone there? Isn't there anyone on the air?
As I set down these notes on paper, I am obsessed by the thought that I may be the last living man on Earth. I've been hiding in this empty house near Grover's Mill, a small island of daylight cut off by the black smoke from the rest of the world. All that happened before the arrival of these monstrous creatures in the world now seems part of another life, a life that has no continuity with the present furtive existence of the lonely derelict who pencils these words on the back of some astronomical notes bearing the signature of Richard Pearson. I look down at my blackened hands, my torn shoes, my tattered clothes, and I try to connect them with a professor who lives at Princeton and who, on the night of October 30th, glimpsed through his telescope an orange flash of light on a distant planet. My wife, my colleagues, my students, my books, my observatory, my world. Where are they? Did they ever exist? Am I Richard Pearson? What day is it? Do days exist without calendars? Does time pass when there are no human hands left to wind the clocks? In writing down my daily life, I tell myself I shall preserve human history between the dark covers of this little book that was meant to record the movement of the stars. But to write, I must live. And to live, I must eat. I find moldy bread in the kitchen and an orange not too spoiled to swallow. I keep watching at the window. From time to time, I catch sight of a Martian above the black smoke. The smoke still holds the house in its black coil. But at length, there is a hissing sound, and suddenly I see a Martian mounted on his machine, spraying the air with a jet of steam as if to dissipate the smoke. I watch in a corner as his huge metal legs nearly brush against the house. Exhausted by terror, I fall asleep. It's morning. It's morning. Sun streams in the window. The black cloud of gas has lifted, and the scorched meadows to the north look as though a black snowstorm has passed over them. I venture from the house. I make my way to a road. No traffic. Here and there a wrecked car. Baggage overturned, a blackened skeleton. I push on north. For some reason, I feel safer trailing these monsters than running away from them, and I keep a careful watch. I have seen the Martians feed. Should one of their machines appear over the top of the trees, I am ready to fling myself flat on the earth. I come to a chestnut tree. October. Chestnuts are ripe. I fill my pockets. I must keep alive. 2 days I wander in a vague, northerly direction through a desolate world. Finally, I notice a living creature. A small red squirrel in a beech tree. I stare at him and wonder. He stares back at me. I believe at that moment the animal and I shared the same emotion, the joy of finding another living being.
Another living human being.
Other human beings, highly overrated.
Unless you're hungry.
Yeah.
Hope they're better than wax beans, yeah.
Yeah. Everything's better than wax beans. And lima beans.
Hey, I like lima beans.
No.
I'm the one. My wife browns them in butter when she cooks them up for me. I love them. Ooh, yeah.
The butter, a
little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, and a whole lot of butter.
You smother them with dirt.
Yeah, that's what mushrooms are. Dirt. They're just dirt.
Mushrooms are good.
Yeah, for dirt.
I am a fan of the fungus.
Well, it has to have somebody there, so.
Yes.
May as well be you in the corner.
Might as well.
After all, you are used to standing in the corner.
Yes, I am.
Poor squirrel. Yeah, that squirrel, he wasn't happy about seeing another human being. Was saying, that guy is stealing all of my chestnuts. What in the world do you have to put up with?
Yep.
Just Mel Torme, that's all. Just Mel Torme.
Mel Torme.
Yeah.
Right.
The velvet.
Heat up those chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Ah, yes.
Oh.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, so he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The velvet fog.
So how are we enjoying our War of the Worlds presentation, gang? I like it. It's a different
show. I like it, too. So far, Martians 1, Earthlings 0.
Yeah, it's not looking good for the Earthers.
No, not looking good for the good guys. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
See, today, if it were modernized, you'd have Congress fighting what to do. And so the Martians would just take over while Congress is fighting. So... That's the modernized version.
Hey, well, with any luck,
they'll take over Congress.
And then, and then when it's finally come to an opinion, the Supreme Court will overrule it, and we're back to square one.
Meanwhile, Dave Garr, CW, and I will be playing this on our stereos very loudly.
Hope it works.
That'll teach them Martians.
Remember, folks, you want to repel the Martians, your ally is Slim Whitman.
Yep.
Yep.
That or puberty love. No, that only works on tomatoes. That only works in tomatoes. Puberty Love. That was the song that killed the Killer Tomatoes. Drove them off.
Wow. What was that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's two movies where music was used to overcome the attackers. And both are gems. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and Mars Attacks.
I would love to host Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be a blast. That would be a blast.
That movie is still copyrighted?
Oh, yeah.
For some reason.
Oh, yeah.
How?
A movie doesn't become public domain just because it's terrible. There are some pretty good movies in public domain. There are some terrible movies that are all copywritten that did it up.
Yes, I noticed that there's that wonderful Orson Welles movie with Orson Welles, Edward G. Robertson.
Yeah, The Stranger. I've got that on my back list. That's one I've always wanted to host.
That's a good movie.
And that is in public domain. How that occurred, I don't know. It's an excellent film. You're quite correct.
Yeah.
But I'm still just befuddled as how Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. I mean, where do they get the money to keep renewing their copyright?
And why?
Well, you don't have to renew it all the time like you used to.
Oh, you don't?
No. But, you know, the thing is that some of the ones that go out, the companies are no longer in existence. So if a company didn't suck it up and also take the copyrights with them, that's how a lot of the movies of the weeks. They were just let go when they were bought out. They just didn't see a value in them. It's amazing.
Why I oughta.
Yep.
But they're on YouTube. A lot of people who had the first VHS or Betamax kept them, converted them, and they put them on YouTube. So a lot of the movie, ABC Movie of the Week, are on YouTube.
Yeah, there were some decent ones.
Yes.
There were some decent ones. I think Moon of the Wolf is a decent one. Good old David Janssen movie.
Yep, that's
I like that.
That is. Bradford Dillman, Barbara Rush, Roy Lozano is in that. It's actually quite a good werewolf flick.
Yeah.
Check
and
it out.
Absolutely. We hosted it.
We got a chance to host it. We were climbing up to Mount to the top of Mount Weirdness so that we, you know, and we were under the super duper moon, you know, to be able to host that movie. We had this something following us as we were heading up the mountain. Ooh.
Big leg.
Oh.
Like Bigfoot.
All right. Hey, we got one more part here to go.
Yeah, let's wrap up War of the Worlds of 1997, starring Billy Shatner and
Sorvino.
What's his name? Paul, yeah.
Yes.
A small red squirrel in a beech tree. I stare at him and wonder. He stares back at me. I believe at that moment the animal and I shared the same emotion, the joy of finding another living being. I push on north. I find dead cows in a brackish field beyond the charred ruins of a dairy. The silo remains standing guard over the wasteland like a lighthouse deserted by the sea. Astride the silo, perches a weathercock. The arrow points north. Next day, I come to a city vaguely familiar in its contours, yet its buildings strangely dwarfed and leveled off, as if a giant had sliced off its highest towers with a capricious sweep of his hand. I reach the outskirts. I found Newark. Newark, undemolished, but humbled by some whim of the advancing Martians. Presently, with an odd feeling of being watched, I caught sight of something crouching in a doorway. I made a step towards it, and it rose up and became a man. A man armed with a large knife.
Stop! Stop. Where did you come from?
I come from many places a long time ago, from Princeton.
Princeton, huh? That's near Grover's Mill.
Yes.
Grover's Mill. Look, there's no food here. This is my country. All this into town, down to the river. There's only food for one. Which way are you going?
I don't know. I guess I'm looking for people.
Who's that? Did you hear something just then?
No. Only a bird. A live bird.
Yeah, a bird. You get to know the birds have shadows these days. Hey, we're in the open here. Let's crawl into this doorway over here and we'll talk.
Have you seen any Martians?
No, they've gone over to New York. At night, the sky's alive with their lights. You know, just as if people are still living in it. By daylight, you can't see them. 5 days ago, a couple of them carried something big across the flats from the airport. I think they're learning how to fly.
Fly?
Yeah, fly.
Then it's all over with humanity. Stranger, there's still you and I, two of us left.
Yeah, they got themselves inside. They wrecked the greatest country in the world. Those green stars, they're probably falling somewhere every night. They've only lost one machine. There isn't anything to do. We're done. We're licked.
Where were you? You're in a uniform.
Yeah, what's left of it. I was in the militia, National Guard. That's good. Yeah, wasn't any war any more than there's war between men and ants.
Yes, but we are edible ants. I found that out. What will they do to us?
Okay, now I've thought all this out. See, right now, we're caught as we're wanted. The Martian only has to go a few miles to get a crowd on the run, but they won't keep on doing that. They'll begin catching us systematic, like, see, keeping the best and storing us in cages and things. They haven't begun on us yet.
Not begun?
No, not begun. All that's happened so far is because we don't have sense enough to keep quiet. Bothering them with guns and such stuff and losing our heads and rushing off in crowds. Now, instead of our rushing around blind, we gotta fix ourselves up, see? Fix ourselves up according to the way things are now. Cities, nations, civilization, progress.
But if that's so, what is there to live for?
Well, there won't be any more concerts for a million years or so, and no nice little dinners at restaurants. So if it's amusement you're after, I guess the game's up.
What is there left?
It's life. Life, that's what. I want to live, and so do you. We're not going to be exterminated. And I don't mean to be caught either, and tamed and fattened and bred like an ox.
What are you going to do?
I'm going on.
right under their feet. I got a plan. We men as men. Okay, fine, we're finished. We don't know enough. We got to learn plenty before we've got a chance. We've got to live and keep free while we learn, see? Now, I've thought it all out, you see?
Tell me the rest.
Well, it isn't all of us that are made for wild beasts, and that's what it's got to be. That's why I watched you. See, I watched you. All these little office workers that used to live in these houses, they'd be no good. If they haven't any stuff to them, they just used to run off to work. I've seen hundreds of them run to catch their commuter's train in the morning, afraid they'd get canned if they didn't, running back at night, afraid they wouldn't be in time for dinner. Lives insured and a little invested in case of an accident, you know? Yeah, yeah. And on Sundays, worried about the hereafter. Well, the Martians will be a godsend for these guys. Nice, roomy cages, good food, careful breeding, no worries. Yeah. After a week or so of chasing around the fields on empty stomachs, they'll come and be glad to be caught.
You've thought it all out, haven't you?
You bet I have. Now, that isn't all. These Martians, they're going to make pets of some of them. Train them to do tricks. Who knows? Get sentimental over the pet boy who grew up and had to be killed. Yeah. And some maybe they'll train to hunt us.
Oh, no, that's impossible. No human being.
Yes, they will. Yes, they will. There's men who'll do it gladly. If one of them ever comes after me, why...
In the meantime, you and I and others like us, where are we to live when the Martians own the Earth?
I've got it all figured out, see. We'll live underground. Now, I've been thinking about the sewers. Under New York, there's miles, miles of them. The main ones are big enough for anybody. Then there's cellars, vaults, underground storerooms, railway tunnels, subways. Ah, you begin to see, don't you? We'll get a bunch of strong men together, no weak ones. All that rubbish gets out.
And you meant me to go?
Well, I gave you a chance, didn't I?
We won't quarrel about that. Go on.
Well, we've got to make safe places for us to stay in, see? And get all the books we can. Those science books. That's where men like you come in, see? Yeah. We'll raid the museums. We'll even spy on the Martians. It may not be so much we have to learn before. Now, just imagine this. 4 or 5 of their own fighting machines suddenly start off. Heat rays right and left and not a Martian in them. Not a Martian in them, see? But men. Men who have learned the way how. It may even be in our time. Gee, imagine having one of them lovely things with its heat ray, wide and free. Oh, we turn it on Martians, we turn it on men, we bring everybody down to their knees.
That's your plan?
Yeah, yeah. You and me and a few more of us. See, we'd own the world.
I see.
Hey, what's the matter? Where are you going?
Not to your world. Goodbye, stranger. After parting with the artilleryman, I came at last to the Holland Tunnel. I entered that silent tube, anxious to know the fate of the great city on the other side of the Hudson. Cautiously, I came out of the tunnel and made my way up Canal Street. I reached 14th Street, and there again were black powder and several bodies, and an evil, ominous smell from the gratings of the cellars of some of the houses. I wandered up through the 30s and 40s. I stood alone on Times Square. I caught sight of a lean dog running down 7th Avenue with a piece of dark brown meat in his jaws and a pack of starving mongrels at his heels. He made a wide circle around me as though he feared I might prove a fresh competitor. I walked up Broadway in the direction of that strange powder, past silent shop windows displaying their mute wares to empty sidewalks, past the Capitol Theater, silent, dark. Past a shooting gallery where a row of empty guns faced an arrested line of wooden ducks. Near Columbus Circle, I noticed models of 1939 motor cars in the showrooms facing empty streets. From over the top of the General Motors building, I watched a flock of black birds circling in the sky. Suddenly, I caught sight of the hood of a Martian machine standing somewhere in Central Park, gleaming in the late afternoon sun. An insane idea. I rushed recklessly across Columbus Circle and into the park. I climbed a small hill above the pond at 60th Street. From there I could see, standing in a silent row along the mall, 19 of those great metal titans, their cowls empty, their steel arms hanging listlessly by their sides. I looked in vain for the monsters that inhabit those machines. Suddenly, my eyes were attracted to the immense flock of black birds that hovered directly below me. They circled to the ground, and there before my eyes, stark and silent, lay the Martians. With the hungry birds pecking and tearing brown shreds of flesh from their dead bodies,
Later, when their bodies were examined in laboratories, it was found that they were killed by the putrefactive and diseased bacteria against which their systems were unprepared. Slain, after all, man's defenses had failed by the humblest thing that God in his wisdom put upon this earth. Before the cylinder fell, there was a general persuasion that through all the deep of space, no life existed beyond the petty surface of our minute sphere. Now we see further. Dim and wonderful is the vision I have conjured up in my mind of life, spreading slowly from this little seed bed of the solar system throughout the inanimate vastness of sidereal space. But that is a remote dream. It may be. It may be that the destruction of the Martians is only a reprieve. To them, and not to us, is the future ordained, perhaps. Strange it now seems to sit in my peaceful study at Princeton, writing down this last chapter of the record begun at a deserted farm in Grover's Mill. Strange to watch children playing in the streets. Strange to see young people strolling on the green where the new spring grass heals the last black scars of a bruised earth. Strange to watch the sightseers enter the museum where the dissembled parts of a Martian machine are kept on public view. Strange when I recall the time when I first saw it, bright and clean cut, hard and silent, under the dawn of that last great day.
This is Mark and Brian, ladies and gentlemen, out of character and here to assure you that the War of the Worlds has no further significance than as the holiday offering it was intended to be.
A radio version of dressing up in a sheet and jumping out of a bush saying boo. Starting now, we couldn't soap all your windows and steal all your garden gates by tonight, so we did the next best thing.
We annihilated the world before your very ears and utterly destroyed the Columbia Broadcasting System. You will be relieved, we hope, to learn that we didn't mean it and that both institutions are still open for business.
So goodbye, everybody. Remember, please, for the next day or so, the terrible lesson you learned tonight. That grinning, glowing, globular invader of your living room is an inhabitant of the pumpkin patch. And if your doorbell rings and nobody's there, that was no Martian. It's Halloween.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And yeah. There is a standing ovation from 30,000 people.
None of them looking in our direction, however, but
on the side where Paul Perino is.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. While you're standing and putting your hands together, let's hear it for Paul Sorvino.
William Shatner. Paul Moyer. Colleen Williams. Leonard Maltin. And playing about 18 different people, Jess Harnell.
Thank you. That was a lot of fun. Paul? Beautiful job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
William has since left, so we can say to Paul, wonderful.
Oh, he was marvelous. He really put the pressure on me.
You know, it's unique to sit here on the stage with everybody, and probably for those of you listening to listen to it with the Foley and the sound effects and the acting to develop into an actual story that, you know, we're sitting here and we're following along in notebooks, but periodically I'd get caught up in the story and forget to turn the page. Oh, God, I'm next.
Luckily, Mr. Raw was there.
Get on! Talk! By the way, this entire production, first and foremost, would not have taken place had it not been for the people that we work with. Pam Baker, who the concept returns and worked very hard to get it done.
Our program director, John Duncan, who backed us 100% on this.
The guy that, I mean, did, I mean, he literally, he's been, he was so stressed after continuous working nights until 11, he actually cussed yesterday. He said dirty words. Mr. L. Frank Murphy.
Well, that was a lot of fun. There we go with our newest, latest, different version of War of the Worlds. Who knows what we'll do next year? Hey, who knows what we'll do next
week?
Who
knows?
Who knows?
Well, you know what we're doing next week.
That's right. We're turning back the hands of time, a little time traveling, so to speak. Stories about time as we're clocking in with The Witch's Tale,
yeah.
Crime Club, yep. And Richard Diamond on Friday. And then Saturday is Life of Riley and an Arch Obler play.
Ooh. Sounds like some good stuff there. Yep, we're beating up on them clocks.
Yeah,
they're beating up on us.
Good to hear Life of Riley. We haven't had Riley here for a while.
We have not.
No, Chester A. Riley.
Yes, funny
and
stuff.
And his friend, Digger
Odell. He's the best.
Yep. And what's great about that is that just like the guy played like 11 different voices in this War of the Worlds, John Brown, who also does one of Dale's favorite characters, Broadway, on
Damon Runyon
Theater.
Yeah.
Well, he not only plays Gillis, Riley's next door neighbor, he also plays the friendly Undertaker. So, yeah.
Hey, we got Shatner coming up next month. He'll be back again with a zero.
He'll
hour.
Be back again.
Yep. It's
just can't stay away from that radio. Quick,
yep,
easy money.
Yep.
For everyone but us.
Yes.
Yep.
Lots of science fiction coming up. Yipper.
Yep. Coming up with some new practical jokers for our next April Fool's Day. Yeah. And of course, And one of them will be from Damon Runyon Theater, as we had mentioned earlier.
Yay!
Hurrah!
I love Broadway. He's a great character.
I love the way those characters talk. You know, they're supposed to be all big mean guy, but they all talk. I don't know how to explain it, but they all talk like that, yeah.
It was a sort of a street talk, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Sure.
That's the way you talked on the streets in New York.
Yeah. Something between the Dead End Kids and the Bowery Boys.
Yep. Wise guys. And a mix of wise guys.
You was good, eh?
That'll do it.
Yeah, we'll do it, but we will... We will be twisting back the hands of time. That's Friday at 6:30 Eastern. Join us, won't you?
I will.
Have a great Halloween, everyone. Happy Halloween. Happy Samhain. Happy Dia de Muertos, the Day of the Dead, and many other fall of festivities that celebrate dead
Sam
things.
Samhain.
Children should Sam Hain.
And Goat King.
And then there's your goat.
We were goat skinning. That's what he sounds like when we skin the goat.
I sound like if you skin me, yeah.
Well, thanks everyone, too, for taking part in almost 65,000 views. We might make it to 65,000 by the end of the year. Our listens, not views.
The castle lights are growing dim.
What
There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we
That's
meet
cool. hey,
in
yeah.
Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
They missed the door slam, but that's good enough. Sounded good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we got a year to think about what we're doing for next October 30th.
Is that all? My goodness. Have to think about that for a moment.
Oh, I think I saw another version or two I have to check out.
Dave, you're always scheming.
I'm a schemer and a dreamer.
There you go. So, were your parents thinking that you would be born on Halloween? Did you come a little earlier, perchance?
I've never been late, but I've never really been early. So, I don't know.
Well, no matter where you go, there you are.
When they were in the room, I was not the first thing in their head. So.
Wow.
I'll leave it at that. Yeah. Just because you're placed in the order doesn't mean you expect it to come, you know. I don't know.
There you go. Well, happy belated birthday wishes.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
Hard to beat the ones I got from William Shatner. You know, that's a hard one to beat.
Well, there you go. It's Shatner himself.
Welcome to 62 at Heights.
I'm still looking for something nice about it yet. But we'll find something. We'll do some exciting things this year. Probably. You never know.
Well, you know, you have that goal of the movie that I mentioned with Orson Welles, The Stranger. Is that the name of the title of it again?
Yeah, I had cut it down to a reasonable spot, but, you know, having to fit in these Spaceship One episodes makes it really kind of tough because I got to pick shorter movies so I have a full half hour left in there for that. So when I have a Spaceship One episode, I cannot use that one.
Ah.
So I'm still trying to figure out the perfect place to try and to host that from. So
host which one?
The Stranger.
I'm sure you shall succeed. It's
at some point.
Yeah.
I also want to
the
Frank Sinatra film, Suddenly. And I think that's a good film.
Wasn't that about assassinating a president?
Trying to assassinate the president, yeah.
Now, what year did that movie come out?
It takes place in Suddenly, California.
What year did that movie come out, if you happen to know offhand?
Offhand, I don't. I think it was late 50s.
It wasn't like
The Manchurian Candidate, which I think got pulled.
Yeah, that got pulled because of the assassination of JFK.
Right.
They just thought that was just too close to the mark. I mean, everybody was just tearing their hair out, screaming conspiracy before the people even knew what conspiracy meant.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Of course, now you have a conspiracy under every tree. That leaf fell. It's a conspiracy.
Everything's a conspiracy now.
That's what my dog thinks every time a leaf falls. It's a conspiracy. Something's going on. I got to find it. I got to kill it. I got to chase it. You see that? It moved.
I can understand that.
He's making friends with an opossum.
Uh-oh. No.
Yeah, we got a possum that comes onto the property in the wee hours. And, of course, I'm so pathetic. I'm up at like 3 in the morning, and he starts huffing at the door, bolts out there. The first time, the opossum keeled over, pretended he was dead. Which confused the dog.
Aww.
And Then it got up and slithered away
him.
While he wasn't.
I killed my friend.
Then the second time he poked him with his paw, he's like jabbed at him, and the possum was like, "What do you want? Leave me alone!" And he just waddled off. And the dog looked confused. So I think he's making friends with it. Did you know they do not carry rabies? Opossums do not carry rabies.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Otherwise, I would not allow that sort of playing. As long as nobody gets bit, nobody gets hurt, then it's all good.
There you
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
They don't carry ticks either.
All you need is a reenactment of Old Yeller.
Yeah. No. Well,
oh,
God, no. Don't do that to me, man.
Oh, don't stretch that movie.
I love this dog
not
way too
movie.
Much. He is, like, such a good friend to me, this dog. I couldn't do that. Ugh. Yeah, we're not doing that.
And I just want to know, where in the world did they get that mythological remedy of curing something? Or am I thinking of another movie? Or I don't know what I'm thinking of, but... Oh, no, I'm thinking of The Yearling. I'm sorry. I'm thinking about another
okay.
movie that's another tearjerker.
Yep.
Never mind. But, yeah, Old Yeller, that's bad enough. No, don't start with that one.
Yep.
Think of something cheerful like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, that'll pep you up.
Yeah, that's a nice
present. Yeah.
Story of a guy
Absolutely.
And his favorite chainsaw. I'm surprised there's not a matchup movie for that one. I mean, you had Jason from Crystal Lake versus Freddy Krueger. We had that one. So team up Michael Myers with Texas Chainsaw Massacre Leatherface. Against those two, tag team match.
There you go.
I mean, we've done Alien versus Predator. They've done it.
Yeah.
Yes, they have.
And that was a
Why
pretty
not?
Good movie, by the way. Gentlemen, with that being said, I really have to be off. I wish everyone a super, super duper Halloween. Absolutely. Hope all the trick-or-treaters don't pull any tricks on you.
I hope not either, since ours happened last night, yeah.
Well, to our listeners and to you guys, my partners, and Gar, wherever you are, also a partner, happy, happy, happy Halloween.
Absolutely.
And with that, what's next?
You know what to do.
Mr. Durante, the Halloween stage is waiting for you.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
And say good night.
Happy Halloween.
Good night. What for this sake, but good night. We've had a few laughs. And it's time for Toodaloo. Glory, bull, up we the same. And Inca, Dinka, Doo.
Inca, Dinka,
Doo. Good night.
Brains.
Good night.
Brains.
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 Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever
you are.
Happy birthday, you thing from another world, you.
Oh, friend.